The following is a selection from the novel The Beautiful and Damned by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Presented by ListenToGenius.com. Narrated by Barrett Whitener. Panic. The man had had the hardest blow of his life. He knew at last what he wanted, but in finding it out, it seemed that he had put it forever beyond his grasp. He reached home in misery, dropped into an armchair without even removing his overcoat, and sat there for over an hour, his mind racing the paths of fruitless and wretched self-absorption. She had sent him away. That was the reiterated burden of his despair. Instead of seizing the girl and holding her by sheer strength until she became passive to his desire, instead of beating down her will by the force of his own, he had walked, defeated and powerless, from her door, with the corners of his mouth drooping and what force there might have been in his grief and rage hidden behind the manner of a whipped schoolboy. At one minute she had liked him tremendously. Ah, she had nearly loved him. In the next he had become a thing of indifference to her, an insolent and efficiently humiliated man. He had no great self-reproach. Some, of course, but there were other things dominant in him now, far more urgent. He was not so much in love with Gloria as mad for her. Unless he could have her near him again, kiss her, hold her close and acquiescent, he wanted nothing more from life. By her 3 minutes of utter unwavering indifference, the girl had lifted herself from a high but somehow casual position in his mind, to be instead his complete preoccupation. However much his wild thoughts varied between a passionate desire for her kisses and an equally passionate craving to hurt and mar her, the residue of his mind craved in finer fashion to possess the triumphant soul that had shone through those 3 minutes. She was beautiful, but especially she was without mercy. He must own that strength that could send him away. At present, no such analysis was possible to Anthony. His clarity of mind, all those endless resources which he thought his irony had brought him, were swept aside. Not only for that night, but for the days and weeks that followed, his books were to be but furniture, and his friends only people who lived and walked in a nebulous outer world from which he was trying to escape. That world was cold and full of bleak wind, and for a little while he had seen into a warm house where fires shone. About midnight, he began to realize that he was hungry. He went down into 52nd Street, where it was so cold that he could scarcely see. The moisture froze on his lashes and in the corners of his lips. Everywhere, dreariness had come down from the north, settling upon the thin and cheerless street, where black bundled figures, blacker still against the night, moved stumbling along the sidewalk through the shrieking wind, sliding their feet cautiously ahead as though they were on skis. Anthony turned over toward 6th Avenue, so absorbed in his thoughts as not to notice that several passers-by had stared at him. His overcoat was wide open, and the wind was biting in, hard and full of merciless death. After a while, a waitress spoke to him, a fat waitress with black-rimmed eyeglasses from which dangled a long black cord.
"Order, please!"
Her voice, he considered, was unnecessarily loud. He looked up resentfully.
"You want to order, or don't you?"
"Of course," he protested.
"Well, I asked you 3 times. This ain't no restroom."
He glanced at the big clock and discovered with a start that it was after 2. He was down around 30th Street somewhere, and after a moment he found and translated the white semicircle of letters upon the glass front. The place was inhabited sparsely by 3 or 4 bleak and half-frozen nighthawks.
"Give me some bacon and eggs and coffee, please."
The waitress bent upon him a last disgusted glance, and looking ludicrously intellectual in her corded glasses, hurried away. God, Gloria's kisses had been such flowers. He remembered, as though it had been years ago, the low freshness of her voice, the beautiful lines of her body shining through her clothes, her face lily-colored under the lamps of the street. Under the lamps. Misery struck at him again, piling a sort of terror upon the ache and yearning. He had lost her. It was true. No denying it, no softening it. But a new idea had seared his sky. What of Bleakman? What would happen now?
There was a wealthy man, middle-aged enough to be tolerant with a beautiful wife, to baby her whims and indulge her unreason, to wear her as she perhaps wished to be worn, a bright flower in his buttonhole, safe and secure from the things she feared. He felt that she had been playing with the idea of marrying Bleakman, and it was well possible that this disappointment in Anthony might throw her on sudden impulse into Bleakman's arms. The idea drove him childishly frantic. He wanted to kill Bleakman and make him suffer for his hideous presumption. He was saying this over and over to himself with his teeth tight shut, and a perfect orgy of hate and fright in his eyes. But behind this obscene jealousy, Anthony was in love at last, profoundly and truly in love, as the word goes between man and woman. His coffee appeared at his elbow and gave off for a certain time a gradually diminishing wisp of steam. The night manager, seated at his desk, glanced at the motionless figure alone at the last table, and then with a sigh moved down upon him just as the hour hand crossed the figure 3 on the big clock. Wisdom. After another day, the turmoil subsided, and Anthony began to exercise a measure of reason. He was in love. He cried it passionately to himself. The things that a week before would have seemed insuperable obstacles, his limited income, his desire to be irresponsible and independent, had in this 40 hours become the merest chaff before the wind of his infatuation. If he did not marry her, his life would be a feeble parody on his own adolescence. To be able to face people and to endure the constant reminder of Gloria that all existence had become, it was necessary for him to have hope. So he built hope desperately and tenaciously out of the stuff of his dream, a hope flimsy enough, to be sure, a hope that was cracked and dissipated a dozen times a day, a hope mothered by mockery, but nevertheless a hope that would be brawn and sinew to his self-respect. Out of this developed a spark of wisdom, a true perception of his own from out the effortless past. Memory is short, he thought. So very short. At the crucial point, the trust president is on the stand, a potential criminal needing but one push to be a jailbird, scorned by the upright for leagues around. Let him be acquitted, and in a year all is forgotten. Yes, he did have some trouble once, just a technicality, I believe. Oh, memory is very short. Anthony had seen Gloria altogether about a dozen times, say 2 dozen hours. Supposing he left her alone for a month, made no attempt to see her or speak to her, and avoided every place where she might possibly be. Wasn't it possible, the more possible because she had never loved him, that at the end of that time the rush of events would efface his personality from her conscious mind, and with his personality his offense and humiliation? She would forget, for there would be other men. He winced. The implication struck out at him. Other men. 2 months. God. Better 3 weeks. 2 weeks. He thought this the second evening after the catastrophe, when he was undressing, and at this point he threw himself down on the bed and lay there, trembling very slightly and looking at the top of the canopy. 2 weeks. That was worse than no time at all. In 2 weeks he would approach her much as he would have to now, without personality or confidence, remaining still the man who had gone too far, and then for a period that in time was but a moment, but in fact an eternity, whined. No, 2 weeks was too short a time. Whatever poignancy there had been for her in that afternoon must have time to dull. He must give her a period when the incident should fade, and then a new period when she should gradually begin to think of him, no matter how dimly, with a true perspective that would remember his pleasantness as well as his humiliation. He fixed, finally, on 6 weeks as approximately the interval best suited to his purpose, and on a desk calendar he marked the days off, finding that it would fall on the 9th of April. Very well. On that day he would phone and ask her if he might call.
Until then, silence.
After his decision, a gradual improvement was manifest. He had taken at least a step in the direction to which hope pointed, and he realized that the less he brooded upon her, the better he would be able to give the desired impression when they met. In another hour, he fell into a deep sleep. This is Barrett Whitener for ListenToGenius.com. Thank you for listening. This audio program is copyrighted by Redwood Audiobooks. Permission is granted to download for personal use only, not for distribution or commercial use.